There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss. There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
From Postcard from the Past and Wardour Studios, this is Podcast from the Past, the Postcard Podcast. This is a place where we go to the bookshelf and take a book at random and shake it and see what falls out as we consider picture postcards and explore what it is that causes us to keep hold of these precious cardboard rectangles. I'm Tom Jackson. I'm delighted to say that my guests today are novelist Ruth Thomas and cartoonist Jeremy Banks. Jeremy and Ruth, welcome to Podcast from the Past.
Thank you very much.
Hello.
Now, Ruth Thomas is a novelist and short story writer. Her latest novel, The Snow and the Works on the Northern Line, is a South London story of museums and archaeology and paleontology and making sense of and valuing the stuff that we dig up in our lives. And Ruth comes to us today bearing, well, this is an unusual postmark. It looks to me like La Plata. Can that be right?
Yes, that's right. Yes, La Plata in Argentina.
So why is that on you?
Well, it's somewhere I went in my early 20s with my then-boyfriend, now-husband. He was doing some research at the university in La Plata.
Wow.
And I went to... I didn't really have much of an aim. I just sort of went...
Went along for the ride.
Exactly, yes. With kind of clutching a sort of vague qualification in English literature and a kind of ambition to perhaps teach English as a foreign language, although I hadn't actually done a TEFL training course or anything, but I hoped I would be useful. So I did actually find a job at an Institute of English there in La Plata, where I taught literature and language to, pre-university age students. And I suppose La Plata is there as a kind of postmark for me because it's the first time I'd been anywhere really abroad, like, you know, a long way away. The only other places I've been to before were in Europe, and this was kind of 13 hours away on a plane.
Quite.
And I felt really quite nervous initially and quite homesick, I suppose because of my age, and I just hadn't experienced that kind of journey or distance from home before. But the longer I spent there, the more I loved it, and it sort of defied quite a few expectations I'd had, because we went not that long after the Falklands War, and a few years after, but, you know, it was still very fresh in the memory for people over there, and I wondered what kind of reception we'd receive. I think the main one was utter bafflement about Thatcher. Right. And people asking me a lot of questions about who she was. But the main feeling I got from people there was sheer friendliness and curiosity. And there was a very Italian feel to the place.
Right.
A lot of people who had gone to Argentina at the end of the 19th century and, you know, subsequent generations had been born there. But there was a really Italian quality to the place, which I hadn't expected. So lots of pasta and red wine and general ebullience.
Sounds pretty good.
I just loved it. Yeah, it was brilliant.
So you dived into that lifestyle?
Yeah, very much, yes. And we were living in a tower block. It was a 13th floor apartment we were staying in, which was, again, quite a departure for me because I'd always lived fairly near the ground before. So it was so many things that were different and exciting. And I'd love to go back there sometime. I've never been back, but it'd be great to.
Very good. Well, I'm not surprised that stuck with you. So, Ruth, do you still send postcards?
I do try to. Yes, when we go on holiday, I normally send one or two postcards dutifully to kind of, you know, more elderly family members, I suppose. I tend to kind of send them to older people rather than young ones because I text my younger friends.
Yes.
But people who maybe haven't grown up with texts, I tend to send postcards. But they're fairly basic. I don't write very much on them, but I try to.
Very good. Like, well, you don't need to, it doesn't have to be a short story, does it? It's just a postcard, so.
No,
it's the thought that counts.
Yeah, absolutely.
Very good, very good. Well, we'll be seeing some postcards of yours in a minute. Now, award-winning cartoonist Jeremy Banks, B-A-N-X, that Banks is how you'll know him. He's been a freelance cartoonist since 1980, and you probably know his work from the FT best. He's been their pocket cartoonist since 1989. That's a lot of news stories he's been reflecting and giving his different opinions on. But you've seen his work in other newspapers and magazines internationally, I'm sure. And Jeremy, you come to us today with an FY1 postmark. What's that?
That's Blackpool. Well, the reason for that is my father came from Blackpool.
Oh.
And so some of my earliest memories are going up there. And he hated the place. I mean, he just wanted to get out. I mean, which he did. We ended up via Liverpool. He sort of ran away to join the theatre, and ended up in the end in London, where he met my mother at the Sadler's Wells Theatre.
Really?
And because she was a dancer, so he was a stagehand. A stage manager for operas and stuff. And then he became a builder after that. That's another story. So he'd kind of escaped from Blackpool, but there was family up in Blackpool. And so we used to go there quite often. And as I say, he hated it. So he used to take me there to show me how awful it was, which was great because then I got a really good look at everything.
Yeah, how dreadful. How dreadful these chips are.
Yeah, so I must show you this. This is awful. No, look at this. This is awful. And so I've always really loved it. It always kind of had an impact on me. I was there quite recently.
It is one of those places where I think it must feel very different being an outsider, being a visitor, and being a resident, because so much of it is show for visitors, it's aimed at them. That's not true of every town. I think somewhere like Blackpool, because it's got a backstage and a front stage kind of thing going on.
Well, it's very much like a kind of a Wild West town where you have the sort of, all the buildings have the sort of that facade of looking like something. You know, like the saloon has this big kind of sort of almost neoclassical kind of thing going on. When you look behind you, you realise it's just a shed, you know. And Blackpool's very much like that. I mean, not many people actually live in Blackpool as such. They sort of live in areas sort of just behind it. And because Blackpool's given over to Mammon, you know, to the tourists, so I mean, he lived a little bit up the way in Marton, and that's what most people do. It's sort of the pleasure beach and all that. It's sort of like the margarine spread on the bread. You know, it's only a thin layer, I've always loved it. I've never lived there or anything. I mean, and the relatives, they'd all gone by the 70s. In fact, my father had as well. So I didn't go there for years, but I have been going back on and off. And I was there quite recently, well, a couple of weeks ago, in fact, because I discovered family that I didn't know I had through my mother's side, and I didn't understand that they lived in Blackpool. So I kind of made a reconnection there.
Oh, that's
but
quite
it's
nice.
Always had a kind of an effect on me. And it's very strange. If I go there, I kind of feel as if I'm part of it.
Right.
But I'm really not, you know. I've probably only been there about, I don't know, 20 times. I don't know, over a period of how many years, you know.
But so some places can do that to you, I think.
Yeah, kind of pull towards somewhere. Yeah.
Very much so. Very, very much so. Yeah. It is a very strange thing to have that.
You're meant to say that you feel like that about Venice. I think, isn't that the idea? It's not meant to be Blackpool. You've got it quite wrong.
Well, strangely enough, strangely you should say that, because I do actually feel that a little bit about Italy, because my father ended up in Rome at the end of the war. He was a soldier during the war. He was quite a bit an older father when he had me. And so most of my friends, their fathers were children during the war. My father actually had been a soldier, and he'd ended up being demobbed in Rome and spent sort of 6 months. And he actually adored Rome. And in fact, it was sort of the war got him out of Blackpool, or got him out of this country, mm-hmm. got him out of the provinces, and sort of that was a big influence on him. And I do exactly have that in a strange kind of way. I have this sort of strange affinity. I've never lived in Rome. I've spent even less time in Rome than I have in Blackpool. But I think these things are very powerful. Yeah, very much so.
Definitely. Mm-hmm. And Jeremy, when did you last send a postcard?
Well, when you were talking to Ruth, I was trying to think. I know this is going to come to me. I mean, it's a long, long time. I haven't sent a postcard on holiday for, years and years and years, because, you know, I would text or email or Instagram or there's all these different WhatsApps and stuff. So, I tend to do thank you notes for people on the backs of postcards of paintings.
Yes.
So that's the kind of thing.
That works. That counts.
Yeah. I haven't done that for a while because I haven't actually had been anywhere to thank anyone for. So
we're living in a world without gratitude right now.
Yes. So I quite like to do that. You know, have some sort of painting postcards of paintings from various art galleries. If I'm in a gallery, I'll buy a few extra just to be able to.
It gives you an excuse to buy them, doesn't it? If you know you're going to use them as thank you. So
yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Don't need to feel bad.
Yes,
about
I do that as well. Actually, postcards as thank you or greeting cards. Mm. Yeah.
Yeah. Or greetings cards. Even if I haven't got any proper greetings cards, they're often nicer than greetings cards.
Yeah, but birthday cards. As well.
Oh right. Yeah. That can work. Mm. Yeah. But actually, sending a postcard on holiday, I'd forgotten such a thing even existed until you mentioned it just now. It's one of those things.
I'm sorry to revive those bad memories.
Well, it's a bit like using the landline. You know, when was the last time I phoned anybody on the landline? You know,
yes. The landline is just designed so people ring you up and try and steal your money now, as far as I can see.
Exactly. Yeah.
I did used to try and encourage my children when they were little to send postcards, and I know that they hated it. They hated me making them send a card to somebody. It was usually at the very end of the holiday, just kind of one line.
And when was that, Ruth? How long ago was that you did that the last time?
Well, they're sort of pretty much. I mean, my youngest is 15 now, so I mean, I wouldn't dream of suggesting he sent a card now. But yeah, about a decade ago, I might have.
Yeah, sure.
Might have suggested it. Yes.
Yeah.
Very good. Well, look, before we see and hear the cards that Jeremy and Ruth have brought along, I'll give you a quick card of mine. So this is a postcard from the past card, like I do on Twitter in my book. So it's an old card, not one that I've received or sent, just one I've plucked from obscurity, and a bit of the message from the back. So this is an amazing card, actually. It's Lake Lugano. It's a very dreamy image. I think it is a photograph, but it looks like a painting. I don't know if you can see that, Ruth and Jeremy. It's got a sort of decal edge. Maybe it doesn't on the scan I've given you. We're dealing remotely on this show, so cards aren't in front of us. But, it's the first card. It's got a sort of a colonnade, I suppose, of arcade, with almost sort of Moorish columns and arches, and then across it a rock in a lake. And it's very dreamy. It looks like... it has a sort of dream atmosphere, a bit like is it called De Chirico, the painter like that or something? Mm. Anyway, some kind of surrealist painter. It's from 1958, and I rather like the detail. This was sent to Coventry, but obviously didn't get to the address in Coventry because it's been crossed out and an address in Aberystwyth has been written on it. So I don't know if Mr. and Mrs. Peach were in the process of moving house when this was sent to them. But anyway, I think it caught up with them. Whether they tried to escape or not, the card arrived. And this is sent by someone called, I think, Neil. It's slightly hard handwriting to read. And it says, Sorry to be such a poor correspondent, but you know the sort of life we lead. I'll leave that hanging. I don't quite know what that means. Are enjoying a stay here, but there is some tension between those members who like the trippers' haunts and bric-a-brac bazaars and those who like the unsophisticated villages reached by forest paths. So this wasn't a dilemma I was aware of on holiday, but apparently, I mean, they must have been in a coach party, perhaps.
That's specific.
Yeah, so but I get it. There's the people who want to see all the sort of tat and the people who want to go off into the woods. I mean, I'm with the tat, really, but I don't know. But which side of the argument are you on?
Oh, tat, definitely. Yeah. Well,
I did just mention that I love Blackpool, so yeah. I think you know what the answer is going to be to that.
I get them. Yeah, I'll see you on the pier. I'll do another quick one. This is the other end of the world. This is the Lanes in Brighton, and it's an odd card. It's sort of two images set in a kind of rather funereal black frame. The Lanes in Brighton are lovely, old-fashioned little shopping. In this, they look like the most deadly, boring streets. They're very uncharming. They're not great photographs. And there's sort of two sort of slightly oikish-looking lads in the foreground. They might be a bit threatening. It's not... This doesn't sell it to me.
Having the two images next to each other seems to magnify the dullness somehow, doesn't it?
It's like a stereogram that doesn't work.
Yes, you know? Yes.
Stereograph. It looks like it's 3D but going nowhere. Yeah. And it's a little cafe, Clouds Cafe. They got their sign in anyway. Anyway, this one was sent in 1989, so it's a lot later. And it was sent to Mrs. Hughes in Sittingbourne in Kent. It's just a little bit of a sort of slice of life, and it's sent to Gladys, or sent from Gladys. And Gladys says, having a nice time, no rain, been out most day, went to a Hungarian circus on Wednesday night. The next night, the motorbike act had a fall. Glad we were not at it that night. We're going over to Auntie for a day on Thursday. It's a must. So I looked it up on Google, so I couldn't see a Hungarian circus that was in Brighton on this date. But anyway, she was pleased that she missed the fall off the motorbike. But I'm not sure it isn't a bit of a sort of an urban myth that you hear about when circuses. Oh, you should have been here last night, something awful happened, or...
Well, I was going to say, how did she know that there'd been the accident if she wasn't there? I mean, were people gossiping about this?
She read the Argus the next day and saw it.
Some kind of... Maybe it was a big news... Maybe it was a horrible accident.
Yeah, I mean, I imagine it was quite.
Yeah.
Well, not
and
just
what
a slight
was the
mishap.
Thing she was saying, it's a must? Was that going to see her auntie?
Yeah, I think that's a slightly sarcastic sort of... To be honest, the spelling and the grammar is very poor on this, and I've tried to smooth it. So it's a little bit hard to know what's going on there. But I think she's saying it's a must. But it's a good way of saying it's an obligation, you know. And it is. If you're in town and your auntie lives in that town, what are you going to do? You know what this is, going up to see relatives in Blackpool, Jeremy. Mm. Do you sneak up to Blackpool? No, you've got to go and see them.
Mm-hmm. Oh, no, I'm quite happy to do it. I mean, I am. It's not a chore. I mean, I stay with them, in fact.
So, oh, well, there you go. So it's worth your while.
Yeah. There's no sneaking involved.
Very good. Well, I should remind you at home, images of all the cards we're discussing today are on the blog, postcardfromthepast.co.uk. So you can see the images. You can see that we're not making it up. And you can make your own minds up about the grim pictures of the lanes in Brighton. Now... Ruth and Jeremy have done their homework. They've dug out some cards for us to discuss today. Ruth, let's start with you. And I think the first card we're going to look at is... It looks like a domestic interior. What's this card?
It is, yes. It is a domestic interior. And it's actually from the Jeffrey Museum in Shoreditch in London.
As was. It's changed its name, hasn't it?
Yes. It's now called the Museum of the Home. I think it changed its name fairly recently, as far as I know. Mm. And I've chosen it for sort of various reasons, really, partly because of the picture, or mainly because of the picture, but also because I particularly love the Jeffrey Museum, or the Museum of the Home. I've been there a few times, and it's basically an old... It's a former arms houses, and each sort of room has been turned into a room across history, I think from the 1600s through to the present day. So you can kind of walk through time, really, through these rooms and look at the way they would have been decorated at that particular time. And this one really... it drew my attention partly because it reminded me of the living room of the house I grew up in when I was a child in the 70s.
Very, very chic.
Well, yeah, I mean, my dad was a designer and an artist, and I think he liked the latest, you know, chic
right.
design. Although we had actually moved, we lived in a small village in Kent, and we'd moved from a very nicely done up kind of Edwardian villa in the middle of the village to this, well, basically a bungalow in the middle of a field.
Oh.
on the edge of the village, because he was very keen to have more land.
Right.
It was sort of...
That's the trade-off, I suppose.
Well, yes, I suppose. It was the same era as The Good Life. I mean, The Good Life was on telly at the time. It was kind of, you know, early, mid-70s when I was little. And I think he thought, this bungalow with lots of land, will, you know, it'll be great and I can have lots of vegetables and fruit and stuff. But the downside of it was that there wasn't really enough space in the bungalow, so we ended up creating another story on top of it. And for quite a long time, it was a little bit primitive, and we didn't actually, for a little while, have a roof. It was
right.
While it was being constructed, it was sort of tarpaulin over this space that would have been the roof. And I suppose one of my earliest memories, I would have been about three at the time, is on a very stormy night, one night shortly after we'd moved in and the roof was being constructed. It was absolutely pouring with rain, and I remember my dad sort of being on the roof beams trying to kind of strap down the tarpaulin, which had come loose. And my sister and I, for some reason, we were actually sleeping in the living room. This particular night, it was all too exciting to sleep. I think it was probably about 9 at night. And yeah, I
probably felt like 4 in the morning to you.
But yes, it was just very, very exciting. I don't think it was very exciting for my parents. I think they were having a fairly awful time, actually. But I remember sitting up in bed with my older sister, eating peanuts and watching Cilla Black on television while my dad was trying to strap the tarpaulin down on the roof. It's very surreal, but that's what the postcard brought.
Young people, that's what life was like.
Exactly, yes. It was just something to do with the colours as well in this postcard, you know, the very 70s kind of yellows and browns and things.
But this is a great credit to the museum, because you're saying they've got it absolutely right.
Yes, I think they have. I mean, there's a few things that perhaps I don't think my parents would have had that carpet, because it's quite in your face.
probably quite expensive as well. It looks, because there would have been some big designer.
Yeah.
Is this all G-Plan stuff? Is that, I'm not an interiors expert.
Isn't it? Yeah. But the other thing that that kind of drew my attention was the open plan staircase, which we had, you know, once we eventually had another story to the bungalow, we had a staircase and it was open plan.
You timed it well.
Yes. And thereby hangs another anecdote, because I must have been about the same kind of age, maybe 4 or 5 by then. And because we were on the edge of the village, which these days is quite, it's kind of commuter belt land really now, but then it was quite a lot more rural and there were quite a lot of farm animals in the neighbouring fields and so on. And I remember there was one occasion when we were all sort of sitting in the kitchen having supper, and suddenly a sheep came sort of barging up the garden path and headbutted its way into the kitchen and clattered up the open plan staircase.
No.
So that was quite...
So it went upstairs?
Quite memorable. Yeah, it went up the staircase. And amazingly, it didn't hurt its legs or anything. But I, again, that's a very vivid memory.
It would be.
Was evoked. Yes.
Because I can half imagine a sheep finding its way through the front door, though it's a long way from anywhere I've ever lived. But upstairs is pushing their luck.
Yeah, I know, it did. I'm not lying. It definitely went up the staircase. So that was, that was an unusual event.
That must be family folklore now.
Yeah.
The day the sheep went upstairs.
yeah. But it was just the combination of the open plan and a sheep. But it was fine. It didn't hurt its legs or anything. So
good. And you got rid of it in the end. You didn't kill.
Yeah. We heard it. No, we didn't. No, we heard it downstairs. It was fine.
You didn't guide it into the oven or anything. Things so heartless.
Handy supper. Yeah.
With those strange shepherd's whistling noises.
Yes.
come by. Oh no, that's for the dog, isn't it?
Yes. Yeah.
So the Jeffrey Museum kind of spirits you back to some of those early your early home.
It does, and it also reminds me of my grandmother because she loved it there. She lived in Walthamstow, which wasn't all that far away, and she used to love visiting the Jeffrey Museum. And she was really into stuff in her house because she was born in the Victorian era in 1895. So her flat in Walthamstow was full of kind of Victoriana and I suppose 1920s bits and pieces, ephemera. So it brings back memories of her as well. We used to call her Pink Hat Nana because she always wore a pink hat.
Was that a distinction from a different grandmother?
Yes. The other one was Grandpa's Nana because, well, the grandpa was still around.
Oh, I see. So that distinguished...
How we distinguished the nanas.
It would have been quite sensible just to give her a different coloured hat.
It would have been, but so the other one didn't really wear a hat. But
that's
pink it, hat
that's
Nana
immaterial.
Always wore a pink hat. Yeah.
Right, well, yes, you don't have any choice of this when you're a child. It just happens, isn't it? It just happens.
Yeah.
Your family is just sort of shaped around you.
Yeah.
Very good. Oh, well, thank you for taking us to the Jeffrey Museum.
And, that's right.
You know, I've been there for an event, but I've never been there to look at the exhibits. I think I need to do that.
It's brilliant, actually. It's a lovely museum. We tried to go there a little bit before the pandemic happened, actually, but unfortunately it was being refurbished, so we couldn't get in. But we sat in the garden outside, which was lovely.
I think they've got all kinds of building works going on, and I think it's supposed to be really improving and, you know, getting even better. So
I think it all looks very happening now, so I'm definitely going to go there again when I can.
Excellent. Now, Jeremy, let's move on to you. What's the first card on your doormat?
Mine is a postcard of Lydd Airport, and where the Bristol super freighters, as pictured, would load up with cars and take holidaymakers over the channel.
This is a fantastic card.
It's a great picture. I mean, I just have such fond memories of this. I mean, I was quite young.
So you did this?
Yes. I would have bought this postcard in the departure lounge, as such, which you can probably see in the fourth picture somewhere on the horizon. The fourth quarter is a bit disappointing.
They're not obvious. I should explain to the listener. It's a multi-view card, the bottom left is probably the best, isn't it? Because there's a little car going in.
Yeah, that's the money shot. Yeah,
because
definitely.
Top right is the same image really with some people.
Yeah,
and then top left is just two planes on the, well, just sitting there. And on the right was just a curve of the runway and a few huts really.
Yeah, I think the first three show the process by which you would load the cars into the plane. I mean, the plane's nose opened up, and you had a ramp and then someone would drive the car into it. Really, they should have had a picture of the plane actually taking off. But I think they're just so thrilled with their airport, they wanted you to have a picture of it. I mean, I think those little buildings. I mean, it's not that brilliantly printed. The photograph's not brilliantly done. Those buildings, sort of on the horizon, must be the admin buildings and that sort of thing. Mm. You've got some totally unrelated aircraft over to one side. I don't know what they're doing there. But yes, I have very vivid memories of this because I've been about, trying to remember, I mean, I don't know, around six. We did a couple of times. We may have done it at times where before I can even remember, but...
And where were you flying to?
To Latouke.
Yeah.
To then go to France. So this would be in the early 60s.
Yes.
Early to mid-60s. So I must have been about six, between six and eight, maybe eight being the last time. I'm not sure of that. You would go down, and then you'd take about 15 minutes to fly over, and then you'd do the whole reverse procedure. And someone would drive. You never drove the car in yourself. You would.
Oh, right.
No.
You didn't stay in the car. It wasn't like
No. No. Sorry. You. If you look, you can see there's some windows at the back, in the fuselage, and people would climb in at the back. There'll be like a little sort of mobile stair unit thing.
Yes.
It was very old-fashioned plane. It was sort of old-fashioned then. I mean, you can see it's propellers and everything. You know, it was. It was all sort of silver metal and pockmarked with little rivets, you know, that clung everything together. It looked like a wartime thing that had been adapted. I'm not sure it wasn't. It was absolutely magical, you know, because I love Thunderbirds and all that kind of thing. So it was the nearest thing you were going to get to real life, to the real life thing. So it was, you know, absolutely magical memories of doing that.
Well, I was amused when I learnt that you were going to talk about this card, and I do like the love the decal edge on this card.
I do as well,
because
very much.
When I was about, I think probably about 5 years old as well, we went from Lyd Airport to Latouke. Mm. Now I don't think they were doing the car thing then. I think we were foot passengers. It wasn't this sort of great fat aeroplane. But I remember it with a certain amount of trauma, because I'm fairly confident when climbing up that little mobile staircase you talked about, my sandal fell off. And I'm pretty sure when we arrived at Latouke, I was in trouble because I only had one shoe.
Oh, right.
So, and I don't think we ever found it again.
So one shoe at Lyd and one at Latouke.
Exactly. And that's no good.
And what year was that?
You do need them in pairs.
Oh, that would probably be about 1969-70.
Right. I'm not sure when they discontinued this service, but...
I went to Lyd probably about 10 years ago on a family holiday with the
Interesting.
Children.
And it's still going? Yeah. Or it was then?
I don't know about the airport. I don't think... So,
you went to Lyd as a place. Well,
yeah, no, we went to Lyd as a place. We never made it to Latouke. We just
you just went to the departure lounge.
Yeah, it was a base for other bits. Right. I mean, Lyd itself is interesting and quite a nice little place. It's got a huge church there, which is called the Cathedral of the Marshes because it's massive,
right?
In comparison to the size of the village, I think it was going to be more important Lyd once, and then. Became less so over the centuries or something.
Heathrow took off? Or...
Yeah, possibly, yeah.
So it's on Romney Marsh, isn't it? So it's a part of that whole...
Yes, yeah.
Which is all changing again because the power station's closing down at Dungeness, I think.
Oh, right, yes. Oh,
I know nothing about Lyd, the village itself. This is all news. Very interesting. All I know is the airport.
Yeah, we stayed in a... It was a nice little... cottage, really, which was devoted to Doctor Who. We chose it because of the boys loving Doctor Who at the time. And there was TARDIS in the back garden, which is exciting.
You're joking.
Yeah, yeah. And we couldn't go to the 2K in that, unfortunately. But
no, but I suspect for young boys, that may have been better than going to the 2K.
Yeah, no, it was great. Yeah, it was
fantastic.
Yeah, fantastic.
And would that be the most exotic aeroplane you've... on your list of exotic aeroplanes, would that be the most exotic aeroplane you've been on, Jeremy?
Oh, definitely, without a shout. I think all the others were just fairly boring, you know, just standard, aeroplanes, absolutely right, yeah. It was interesting because I managed, as I say, my father was a soldier during the war. He was in the signals, and I managed to track down one of his commanding officers just to find out what he'd been doing, because I didn't really know much about his life, because, as I say, he died when I was relatively young.
Right.
I can't remember how, but the subject of Lyd Airport cropped up. And so this guy was fairly old. You know, he was in his 90s. He was in very good shape. I mean, he was very physically and mentally active. But it was quite interesting, because when I spoke about the Bristol Superbrator and loading up the cars and everything, he had a memory of having done that. But because his memories had got so old, he wasn't sure if he was making it up or not. It was really interesting. And I would stress, absolutely nothing wrong with his mind. I mean, he was very, you know, totally on top of everything.
Just a long time ago. Mm.
But it was just because the memories had been kind of reprocessed so many times that he just kind of lost that one a little bit. You know, I can relate to that. You know, I'm nowhere near the age he was when I met him. Mm. And so I actually, I said, oh, yeah, well, I've got a postcard of this. And so I sent him a scan of this very postcard to show him that he hadn't been making it up, that it wasn't an illusion. And he was very pleased to see it.
But also, it's such an eccentric thing. It's not like your knowledge of that way of flying had been reinforced by seeing it every day on the news. It's something that came and something that went.
Yeah, and then was never seen again. And if you describe it, it does sound like a strange thing. You know, the nose of the plane opened up, and then you drove into it, and then flew off. Yeah. Said, what? I don't think so.
It's quite Heath Robinson, isn't it?
It does seem very strange. You know, I think it took about three cars. So, you know, say a family of four in each one. So, I don't know, it'd be about 12. The probably capacity for about, I don't know, 20 people at the back maximum. It probably didn't. There may have been some people who didn't use their cars to get over. I don't know. It was, at the time, it seemed like a very, you know, the seats were not, the interior was not plush. You know, was not... It was like a military sort of operation, you know.
Yes.
Which made it all the better for me, you know.
Yeah.
It reminds me of these bubble cars that were in La Plata actually a lot, sort of front opening little cars which were very round.
Yeah.
I think there was some connection with Messerschmitts actually. I think they might have.
There was a Messerschmitt. Well, there was the ones that opened up at the front. I think they were Italian. They sort of opened up like washing machines, didn't they?
Tiny, very low to the ground.
Then but you had another one which sort of looked like a fighter plane that had its wings and most of its body removed and its wings, and that was a Messerschmitt.
That was Someone at school had one of those.
They were still all over the place in La Plata in the early 90s.
Really?
Oh, really? That's quite late for those. Yeah, because I remember seeing those like in the 60s and 70s. But
How funny. Well, very good. Thank you for taking us to, we should correctly say, Ferryfield Airport, Lyd.
Apparently so, yes. I've always referred to it as Lyd Airport.
Quite.
Yeah. Ferryfield, sorry, yeah. Apologies.
I think Ferryfield is
the... It's a little quaint, isn't it?
That's like the dog breeder's name. That's the official name. Yeah. Very good. Well, I'll do another quick card of mine. I can't say it's going to take you to the depth of memory that Lyd did. This is a card of... Ibiza, and it's Ibiza in, can't see the date, it's all, I think maybe 1980, don't know. Bits of it amuse me, so I just thought I'd let you see. It's a beach view, people lying on the beach with not many clothes on, looks a nice day, lots of big hotels in the background, typical beach holiday. Says, I'm glad you had better weather in Torquay than ours in Cornwall last week. This is David and Joan talking to someone in Wiltshire. However, we are more than making up for that now. We're enjoying reading, swimming and sunbathing in regular doses. Tomorrow we go out for the day on a beach party with organised games, etc. Tonight we're going to have an anniversary meal together, a pizza of some kind. 2 6-to-8-inch long lizards scampered past just now. So it's great observational detail, really good. And then it says, the man nearest the camera in red bathing shorts hires out the pedalo boats. And on the front of the card, in the bottom right, in the foreground really, is this chap looking at the photographer, and he's a big lad. I mean, he looks a little bit like Gérard Depardieu. Perhaps not Depardieu now, and Depardieu when he was just well built, and with longish hair. And he's looking at the camera. He's obviously the chap who rents out the pedalos. He managed to get himself in the postcard picture. So I'm always intrigued to find cards where you can identify someone on the front, because they're almost by definition anonymous. So
it's almost like the artist looking out from his own painting, isn't it?
You dignify this very much. But yeah, it's the man who does the pedalos. And also when you're on holiday in a resort, sometimes there are often people who are sort of characters that everyone knows. Oh, he's the pedalo man. And I suspect this chap was well known around that corner of Ibiza.
I think he looks like he expects to be recognised as such, doesn't he? He clearly would think that this was his postcard, a postcard of him with some other people randomly in the background.
Yeah. The only thing is, there's not a single pedalo in the picture. You'd think he'd have wanted to get them in there. Or maybe not. Maybe you want the pedalos, you're going to have to pay for the pedalos.
He should have worn some trunks with sort of pedalos for hire or some sort of product placement, shouldn't he?
Nowadays, he'd be a pedalo influencer. He'd have got it all sorted.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss. There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
You're listening to Podcasts from the Past, the Postcard Podcast, and my guests today are cartoonist Jeremy Banks and novelist Ruth Thomas. Now, here's a surprise. We've received a postcard. And this postcard is from Susan Last of Powys. And it's a lovely postcard of some chapels in Brittany. And she says, the answer is Holy Island, Lindisfarne, and Gertrude Jekyll. Well, sorry, Susan, that's the wrong answer. Right, let's get on with the postcards. Now, Ruth, what's the second card you've got for us today?
Well, this is a card that I actually sent when I was very small. I'll describe the card a little bit. It's a very kind of sylvan, leafy, fieldy scene of two small horses, ponies, I think. And it's in Galloway. On the back of the card, it says it's Galloway. So it's a kind of a very attractive field with a sort of stately home thing in the background.
There's sort of a Scottish-looking face at the back, isn't there? You just about see.
Yes. And on the back of the card, it's got a very lyrical description of where it is. I'll read it out. It says, ponies, pools, pool and leaves. A delightful autumn picture of morning's heavy shadows and the early frost sparkling on the grass taken near Galloway. Which I thought was rather lovely and quite unusually poetic, actually.
So that's the printed description?
Yes, it's on the back of the card.
They've let themselves run away with it. It's great.
Yes, I know. It was all very lyrical and poetic.
Was that J. Arthur Dixon writing?
Yeah, I don't know. It's anonymous. Right. But it made me think, I think people did do that a little bit, didn't they? Publishers of postcards, maybe at that time.
Sometimes
you would get these funny little... I mean, you'd know better than me because you look at postcards more. But
too much.
But that does sound very poetic. I mean, I'm certainly no expert. Yeah. That's quite a surprising combination of words to see as a description.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
It always makes me laugh when they say on the front sometimes picturesque Devon or picturesque,
yes,
and you think, well, I'll be the judge of that.
Yeah,
exactly. I mean, here they say a delightful autumn picture. You think, well, yes, it is rather delightful, but
yeah, but you know.
Yeah.
It's in the eye of the printer, evidently.
Yes, yes. But anyway, I sort of am more down to earth in what I subsequently write. I worked out, because I wrote this on the 2nd of September 1973, when I would have recently turned 6.
Oh.
And I'm going to alter names just to...
I think you should.
Feeling.
I think you should.
Yes, yes. So I sent this to... well, he was my best friend, and I suppose there was a sort of childhood romance, very early childhood romance going on. We were very, very fond of each other, and I'm going to call him Ben. And I wrote, "To Ben, we are in Scotland now, and I hope you are not bored without me. Love, Ruth, XXXF." Lot of kisses. Yes.
Lovely.
Yes, and in fact, Ben's sister... discovered this when she was having a clear out recently, and she scanned it and emailed it to me because she said, "This just made me smile," you know, because I seemed so direct and so sure that he would be very bored without me being in Kent with him, and that I was in Galloway, and poor thing, you must be terribly bored without me being there. And it just sort of made me think how people alter over the years, you know, from being very, very confident when you're 6 to being perhaps a little bit less confident in relationships when you get older.
It would be an odd thing to write as an adult, wouldn't it? It would be incredibly rude.
Yes.
It certainly would, yes.
It would be sarcastic. It could only be sarcastic.
Well, femme fatale, I suppose, if nothing else.
it's charming from a 6-year-old, isn't it?
Yes.
It is.
Yes.
It is. It's charming. But yeah, if you were an adult, it'd be a very weird thing to receive.
It would be a bit worrying, definitely.
Yes. Yes.
Do you remember writing it?
No, I don't remember writing it. But I do remember, you know, being, you know, having this lovely friendship for a few years before we realised that we were completely persona non grata and we didn't want to spend any time with each other at all. You know, by the time you're about 8 or 9, you just kind of go your separate ways, don't you? Well, that's what we did anyway. But we just used to... Well, I suppose we shared an interest in sort of being a little bit naughty. We used to both want to run away together. We hatched this kind of grand plan to run away, and we had these... I think, as far as I remember, we literally tied our belongings in scarves over sticks and set off up the road, because that's what we thought you did when you run away. You know, we were probably about 5 at the time, and we were, you know, very swiftly discovered by our mothers about 5 minutes up the road.
Which must have been a relief.
I think it probably was quite a relief to them, yes.
And to you, I'd have thought, really? Or were you prepared for the
probably.
Big... Were you prepared to go to La Plata?
Well, yes, I must have a bit of a sense of adventure, I suppose, but I don't think I knew of La Plata's existence at that point. But yeah, no, we had some fun, and I suppose it's sort of a little bit like, you know, an unlikely relationship between, you know, characters in novels, like, you know, or books like Winnie the Pooh and Piglet or Moomin Troll and Sniff. You know, we were quite an unlikely pair, really, but we just sort of hit it off. So that's what the postcard brought back, you know, that friendship. And also the importance of Scotland, actually, in my life later on, because I came up to Scotland when I was 18 to study and never really left, apart from,
right.
you know, going to Argentina and a few other places here and there. So obviously my early experiences of going up to Scotland with my family as a child probably were in there somewhere in my decision to stay here, really, and to live here.
I think it's funny when these cards, things come back to you. I mean, often they come back to you in sort of inevitable, sad circumstances, really, you know, when relatives die. But there is this sense that your message, your thoughts, your personality at that time has been sort of caught in amber and it's been handed back to you. And it's not always a, you know, it can be a slightly awkward thing to look at. Oh, what did I write there? Or what did I, what silly joke was I making then? Or
I suppose
you're so young and innocent, you can't feel bad about how you were when you were six.
No, no. But it is funny to kind of confront something that you wrote such a long time ago when you were a very, very different person, although I suppose, you know, a version of yourself, obviously. But, yeah, and also I suppose having children of my own now, kind of knowing what a six-year-old, how they behave from the point of view of an adult, it's quite interesting to see yourself in that way too, I think.
And of course, the thing about a postcard, it's still there.
Yeah.
You know, there's a sort of permanence to that thing. Not that they all survive, but if circumstances are right, they survive. You've got to sort of dip them in a bucket of water or set fire to them, other than that, or lose them.
Yeah. No, it does an odd thing with time, doesn't it? Because they're still very kind of, they feel very current, don't they? Whatever the message is that's written there, it's like, you know, reading a book, it feels very direct. That kind of message.
Yes, I mean, one of my very few observations on these things really is that even from the beginning, when postcards came in, one reason they were rather sort of frowned upon by polite society is they were far closer to conversation than proper writing, and I think that's why they often, even old ones, I mean, much older than the one you've shown us today, that the messages leap out at you a bit because they're more like someone chatting to you. Than when you open a book and read a diary or something, or an autobiography or something that's far more formally written. They can be. I mean, even from the turn of the 20th century, it can sound like someone's chatting on the bus next to you. It can sound that immediate, which is lovely. I find that fascinating.
And people don't they don't prepare a text for a postcard. Often they're writing them in a bar or something, or after a long day, and they don't necessarily think that clearly about. Spend a lot of time thinking about what they're going to say, and often those are the more interesting things. You get a sort of slightly direct line to the subconscious.
I look at the, you know, I look at really a very great many cards, and nearly always the interesting line, the line that has some personality or some oddness or something about it, is two-thirds of the way down the message, because they've done the "we went here, we arrived safely," and then they've unlocked something, and the interesting bit comes out, the personal bit.
So,
I don't know why that is, but it's just the way it seems to work.
Quite often that happens with a piece of writing. You know, you sort of, you know, a beginning of a short story or something, there's quite a lot of preamble, and then you actually get to the main point a couple of paragraphs later.
Well, and I suspect when you're writing, you can then cut out that first bit, because that was you getting going. On a postcard, you think, well, it's filled up the space, hasn't it? You know. They won't mind. They want to know that we got here safely and the weather's hot. They want to know that. That's the deal.
Yeah. I wonder if the language of texting has partly come from the language of postcards, you know, because people often chop out personal pronouns and things, just say went to wherever. People have done that in text, haven't they? I mean, I don't know if that's still such a thing, but
they were very
kind of truncated.
And emails. I know people who write really good texts and emails. I'm still writing letters when I write a text. I put punctuation. I know people who write brilliant emails and texts, and sometimes they don't bother with punctuation, or they just do it as they come along, and they're very fresh. You know, they read really well. It's a kind of a talent.
There's an etiquette about punctuation in text now as well, isn't there? Which I'm not very au fait with.
Because it can seem too brutal.
Yeah, if you put a full stop at the end of a sentence, it's meant to be abusive to certain people, isn't it? Yeah.
Well, you can see why.
But I think young people. I saw somewhere that young people make allowances for older people because we don't know that.
Of course they do.
So they say, oh, they don't mean to be rude, they just don't understand, you know. Yeah. Sort of
I'm sure that's true as well, because we all every conversation works that way, actually. We're all making allowances and all the time, otherwise it's not a conversation.
Yeah.
And Ruth, you talking of sort of correspondences and childhood correspondences, and you talked briefly about a Moomin then. You had a sort of Moomin correspondence, am I right?
I did, yes, yes. I wrote to Toby Anson and she wrote back, which was lovely. This was because a friend of my parents, he used to write for The Guardian, actually. He wrote the Country Life column for a long time in the 70s, and he used to travel a lot. And he went to Finland and discovered, he met Tove Jansson while he was out there, and asked her, because I was such a big fan of the Moomins, I said, is there any way you could get a letter to her, or, you know, could you let me know what her address is so I can write to her? And he got it for me. He asked her permission and she said yes. And so we had a little correspondence, and she wrote these amazing illustrated letters with pictures of Moomin Troll cat. And yeah, no, it's quite a honour to have them. I know she wrote a lot of letters to her young fans. She was quite a prolific letter writer. But they're really treasured things. I've got one of them in a frame on my wall, where she writes, "Happy Spring to you," which is lovely.
How many do you have? You say a correspondence. So
That's probably slightly over-egging. I think she wrote me three letters, and she wrote some to my sister as well. So, there was some to-ing and fro-ing, definitely, of letters. And they're just beautiful things. Her handwriting is wonderful and illustrated with beautiful pen and ink drawings. Mm. So, yes, I'm very lucky to have those.
So considerate that she did it.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, she really spent time on, you know, just being, well, caring about the people she was writing for. You know, she had a very caring nature, I think.
And did you illustrate your letters to her?
I did, because I described a particular toy that was special to me and drew a picture of it, and she said how much she liked the sound of it.
That's really
fantastic. Yeah. And she never sent you a postcard, did she?
No, there were letters in envelopes. I've kept the envelopes as well.
Good.
Because they've got lovely stamps on, finished stamps and finished postmarks and things. So, yes, I opened them very carefully, because as soon as they arrived, we knew, obviously, who they would be from. So we opened the envelopes with a knife rather than just tearing it, you know. And I was a huge fan of her writing, and also her writing for adults. You know, later on, I really enjoy her short stories as well.
Very good. Well, that's an enduring piece of correspondence that sort of still has a power for you now.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
And maybe it pushed you towards your career, I don't know.
I think it did, actually. I think her interest in that kind of combination of comic and sad did influence me quite a bit. I love that kind of bittersweet quality in writing, finding the sadness in humour and vice versa. And I think a lot of her Moomin stories have that. Partly, I suppose, because she was writing not that long after the Second World War, and there was a lot of sadness, but, you know, I think she didn't want her writing to be kind of bogged down by that, and she wanted there to be oddness and eccentricity and laughter as well in what she was doing. So I think I picked up on that quite early on and just really appreciated that as a young reader. She probably has been quite an influence, I think, on my writing.
Excellent. Oh, well,
she has been for a lot of writers. I know Ali Smith is a big fan of hers as well, isn't she? She's written various forewords and things for her books.
Yeah. Well, very good. Well, you know, treasure them.
Yeah.
Putting them on the wall is a good idea, I think. Nice and safe, where you can see them.
Yeah. I see it every day when I walk into the house.
Good. Right, Jeremy, what's the final postcard you've got for us? I think this is a... Well, you must describe this for us. It's a strange image.
It is slightly strange. Actually, the image isn't the most important thing of this postcard, but it's sort of grown on me over the years. It's a man. Well, I'm not quite sure. It's a man tending to a donkey. Now, I should say this is from Spain. It's got a fantastic stamp on the back. And this would be, so this is from the very early 60s. I'm trying to see, I can't say, very early 60s. So this is in the time of Franco.
Right.
And there's a very kind of dour kind of crucifixion scene on the back here, which is clearly supposed to give a message of just general misery. So anyway, you've got this peasant man, sort of on a corner in what must be, I presume, a small Spanish village. It doesn't say anything on the back as to what this actually is to help us.
Oh, right.
But he's, so this donkey is sort of loaded up in the back with sort of rope or so. I'm not quite sure what it is, to be honest.
It's a big donkey, because it is much taller than him.
Or maybe a small man, I don't know. It is a bit, maybe, yeah. It is a big donkey.
Is it a mule, maybe?
Or maybe it's a mule. I never thought about it. Maybe, I don't know my way around these things. Perhaps it's a mule. He's got some bottles, some sort of amphora, look kind of quite old, presumably for containing wine or water, I don't know. Maybe they get loaded into the onto the donkey. I'm not quite sure what's going on here. I sort of presume, maybe it's posed, or maybe it's just a kind of snapshot of life. I suspect it's posed.
Well, donkey sensibly is in the shade.
Yes.
Half in the shade, actually.
Yes. It's a strange process. So this is from my grandmother.
Right.
She used to go on holiday a lot until she spent all her money. And this is a holiday in Spain.
Easily done.
Yes. So she did splash out on fancy holiday. She went on cruises and stuff. And that all had to stop when the money ran out. So the background to this one is that I was working on writing some stories, and I wanted to incorporate my grandmother, well, make them about my grandmother, just sort of have her be the lead character. And I do collect postcards. I mean, I've always collected postcards. I've got books full of them, and I've got a lot of old family postcards. And I thought, well, I'll go through the old postcards, because I knew she sent a lot of postcards. And there are all sorts of families. And I thought, well, that would give me her voice, because she died a long, long time ago.
Yes.
So this would be about 10 years, 15 years ago I was doing this. I can't remember now. And so I went through her postcards. I sort of filed them up, those from her to my mum, and those from her. And most of her postcards are just like really boring. She just had she had quite a difficult relationship with my mother. So I had a lot of postcards to my mum. And they are quite, there's nothing really personal in them. It's just, I caught the plane and had a nice meal. And she described the meal in some detail. Mm. And you kind of get the sense that she's just trying to sort of fill up the space with neutral stuff, so she doesn't actually have to engage at all. They're quite strange. But then I found this one. And this one is actually to me.
Oh.
And I shall read it to you, because it says, my dear, so I'm, but bear in mind, I'm very young here. I think I'm probably no older than four, so I'm maybe even younger. So she writes, my dear little JB, that's me, Jeremy Banks. The writing's not very good. You see, Didam was the name I gave her. Everyone called her Didam. She didn't want to be called granny or grandmother or anything like that. She was quite vain and didn't like to be reminded that she was old enough to have a grandchild. So she kind of, I think Didam was my attempt to say grandmother in some strange way. So she clutched onto that. And so that's what she became. So she says, you see, Didam hasn't forgotten you, darling. I came on a big comet plane. So that's quite cool, a comet. That dates it as well.
Yeah.
I came on a big comet plane today and had a lovely lunch. So she has to mention lunch, yeah. A lovely lunch on the plane. I looked for you in the in the garden at Lofting Road. That's where we lived. We lived in North London. I looked for you in the garden. I used to spend a lot of time in the garden digging up things. So that's an interesting little detail. I looked for you in the garden at Lofting Road, but couldn't see you. Be a good boy while I am away. Lots and lots of love from Didan. So incredibly personal message.
Yes.
From someone that I haven't seen. I hadn't seen this card for years, you know. So it's sort of kind of extended beyond the immediate necessity of its writing. You know, it sort of ended up, for me, it sort of expanded out a bit. And it was just a really, really lovely thing to find. And and there you have it. So it was just interesting sort of hearing a voice that I hadn't heard for, you know, over 30 years, you know. So it's quite a powerful thing, and nice to nice to receive.
And that thing of looking out the plane window to try and spot somewhere you know, it's always very difficult, and we always do it. And if you can spot, look, there's Tooting Beck Lido. I think, oh, that's amazing, and I'm up here.
I would assume that that was a total artifice on her behalf, but quite rather a nice one. I don't think the plane would have flown over North London.
She's looking. She doesn't mean she's...
It's a nice thing to say, though, isn't it? And I kind of rather like that.
It's a very kind of grandparenty thing to say, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly.
I was thinking about these postcards. They're very brief. And the image sort of connects or disconnects from the picture. I was in that case that the image has no connection at all to the words.
Really none, apart from the fact she's going to Spain. But she doesn't mention that in the postcard. She assumes I wouldn't know what Spain was.
But I'm glad she wrote where she worked, because she could have said, here's a lovely donkey, there are lots of them here. And that's nothing really for you.
Yeah, and it's a very personal message, which is quite unlike most of her, Her messages on the back of postcards were rather functional. This sort of jumps out of the page at you, if that's the right word. And this is one of my treasures. This is something I actually keep in my desk drawer. And
do you?
Yeah, yeah.
And do you have several like this from those trips?
No, that's the only one of quite like this that I could find. I'm maybe they got lost. I don't know. Most of the postcards I have, family ones, are pretty functional. We had a nice time at the beach, or we went to this, we went to that, we did this. And, you know, they're interesting in their own way. But they're not desperately personal. And then, of course, she stopped going abroad anyway.
Right.
So that put the mockers on that. There were no more postcards to be sent. I don't think she really went anywhere after that. She didn't sort of travel around the country. It was sort of abroad or nothing at all.
That's a good
in a strange
attitude.
Kind of way. At a time when people didn't travel that much, you know. She sort of stopped travelling when everybody else started.
Right.
You know.
I remember my school friends and I used to send each other postcards in the 80s. It was still a thing, I think, even between young people, to sort of send cards, wasn't it, from holidays? Well, it was for me anyway. Yeah. And quite often we would put X marks the spot of kind of where we were staying or where we'd been, or that seemed to be a thing that happened, you know. Just trying to locate yourself within a picture or a scene.
Yes, interventions they call them in the art world. I think it's when you scrawl something on the front.
All right, yeah.
But that's a nice moment when you do that, because sort of the protocol of a postcard is the front is mass produced and the back is personal. That's the kind of way it works. So if you start scrawling on the front, you've ruptured that protocol. It's like the message, the personality has broken through to the front, and you're kind of breaking the rules.
Like the fourth wall or something.
Exactly. And that's great. I think that's when it gets interesting. Well, look, thank you both so much for sharing these cards with me and with listeners and with each other. I always say the same thing. I never know where the cards will send us. Another quick reminder, everyone at home, you can see these cards. You'll be able to see the ponies in the autumn light. You'll be able to see the oversized donkey, which may be a mule. You'll be able to see the man who rents out the pedalos. They're all going to be on the blog, postcardfromthepast.co.uk. Now, before we let Jeremy and Ruth back out into the... Well, I'm afraid it's twilight. I've got one more card for you. I would normally sort of pass this across to you with a quizzical expression, but it's not really going to happen as we're all separated by the digital world. But there's a card, the last card on your sheet. I don't know if you could turn to page 7 or whatever it is, and you should see an oversized postcard. I don't know if you can see that.
Mm.
Perhaps you could describe it for us, Jeremy.
It's a scene of the elves getting cakes out of the back. Oh, pixies! Sorry, they're called pixies.
They must be pixies, isn't it? It's Pixieland.
It says Pixieland Bakery. Sorry, yeah. Pixieland Bakery special birthday cakes. They're all being unloaded out of the back of this van, and there's names attached to these: John, Jean, Mary, Anne. Sort of names that rather date it. It looks like a card from the '60s, doesn't it? There's a whole lot of people pixies making cakes and putting icing on cakes and baking them. There's a big sign that says special today birthday cakes. Oh no, so the cakes are being loaded into the back of the van, not out.
Yeah, they're coming out of this pizza oven, this sort of rather trendy wood-fired pizza oven.
Yeah. And as someone's writing happy birthday in icing.
They're working pretty hard, and the sort of bearded ones are sort of supervising. I think they do the heavy work.
It's like a kind of birthday version of Santa's Little Helpers, almost, isn't it?
Isn't it? Yeah. This is Pixie Bake Off, I think. Anyway, this card is not just a normal card. We're not just looking for its graphic attractiveness. this is a record. It's a postcard that you can play on a gramophone.
It's got a white hole, a white thing in the middle, hasn't it?
There's a hole for the spindle, and you might just be able to see the grooves. This is a company. It's called Melody Cards of Royal College Street, London, NW1. Now, luckily, with a bit of preparation, young Tom at Wardour Studios has actually made a digital copy of this on his record player. And so if we ask him very nicely, he will be able to play for us now what the Pixies sound like. Not bad.
Oh, they don't sing.
I don't think they're singing Pixies.
Oh, I'm disappointed. Yeah, I thought it'd be sort of high pitched voices.
Well, the tune is Tom Hark, isn't it? South African song.
Right.
Oh, right.
Remember the Piranhas had a hit with it in the 80s?
I must say, it's not what I was expecting to hear.
No.
It rings a bell. Yeah.
The music seems to bear no relation to the picture.
No, it's much better than I was expecting, to be honest.
Yes, you'd think it would be like a children's record.
Yeah, like sort of Pinky and Perky type kind of thing or something. Yeah.
But it's not bad sound quality for a piece of cardboard.
And it is cardboard.
It's cardboard with just the normal sort of thin laminate on it.
Uh-huh.
Wow.
But it's a piece of cardboard, yeah.
It would have been played on an ordinary record player.
It's a regular record player, yes.
Yeah.
The only thing is that you've got to keep it a bit carefully to stop it getting scratched.
Yeah.
This one's not been sent through the post. 78. This one. 45.
Yeah.
Well, as the weird pixie hipster bakers continue to rotate at exactly 45 RPM, that's it for this time on Podcasts from the Past. I'd very much like to thank my first-class guests for sharing the postcards from their pasts. Ruth Thomas and Jeremy Banks, thank you both.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And thank you for listening. Bye for now. See more postcards with their messages posted every day on Twitter. Do follow me at Past Postcard. And you can buy the book Postcard from the Past by me, Tom Jackson, at Amazon and all good booksellers. And if you're looking for podcast production, check out wardourstudios.co.uk.